Will the House come to order? Will the members please indicate their presence by voting? Has any member failed to vote? Would the clerk please take the roll?
38 members present.
We have a quorum present to conduct business. Mr. Majority Leader.
Mr. Speaker, Representative Schultz is excused from the call of the House. Representative Cato was excused to a plain time, and I note her presence.
Our chaplain today is Father Innocence. Would the members please rise for the invocation?
In the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit. Christ is risen from the dead, trampling on death by death, and upon those in the tombs bestowing life. O Lord God Almighty and our Redeemer, enlighten us, that we may give heed to thy words. I am wisdom, I am better than jewels, nothing you want can compare with me. I am wisdom and I have insight, I have knowledge and sound judgment. To fear the Lord is to hate evil. I hate pride and arrogance, evil ways and false words. I make plans and carry them out. I have understanding and I am strong. I have kings to rule and rulers to make good laws. Every ruler on earth rules with my help, statesmen and noblemen alike. I love those who love me. Whoever looks for me can find me. I have riches and honor to give, prosperity and success. What you get from me is better than the finest gold, better than the purest silver. I walk the way of righteousness. I follow the paths of justice, giving wealth to those who love me, filling their houses with treasures. Christ is risen. Indeed, he is risen. Amen.
Representative Copeland.
Speaker, are you moving to ask you to set the prayer be spread on the journal?
Are there any objections as to having the prayer spread upon the journal? Hearing no objections, so ordered. Would the clerk at this time please certify the journal for the 110th legislative day?
As chief clerk, I certify as to the correctness of the journal for the 110th day and House Supplement Numbers 62 and 63.
Representative Clarkson.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent the journal for the 110th day and House Supplement 62 and 63 be approved as certified.
Are there any objections as to the correctness of the journal and the supplements? Representative Pettyjohn objects.
I think I noted a mistake, Mr. Speaker. It's on page 1288 regarding amendment number 21. It says page 6, line 7, after traitor. I don't think it was after traitor. I think it was after arbitrator.
Representative Pettyjohn, the amendment was submitted that way, but perhaps it should be corrected. Representative Clarkson?
I just was going to comment that I distinctly remember that one, and in fact, the journal does reflect exactly what was offered.
I remove my objection, Mr. Speaker.
Are there any further objections as to the correctness of the journal and the supplements? Hearing no objection, the journal stand approved. This brings us to guest introduction. Representative Pinyalberry. Would the House please stand at ease? Will the House come back to order? Do we have any guests for introduction at this time? Representative Herman.
Mr. Speaker, in Gallery A, I'd like to introduce Peter Kust from Nelson Lagoon.
Any further guests for introduction? Representative Jenkins.
Mr. Speaker and fellow members, I note a friend of mine in Gallery A, Kay Buckingham.
Any further guests for introduction? Let's see if we have a message or two from the governor.
I have none, Mr. Speaker.
Messages from the Senate.
The Senate approved the following citation and it was sent to enrolling, honoring People Count Incorporated. The Senate failed to recede from its amendment, the Senate Committee Substitute for House Bill Number 60, Finance. Act and Committee Substitute for House Bill 60, Finance, making appropriations for the operating and loan program expenses of state government. The President appointed a conference committee to meet with a light committee from the House to consider the bills. Senator Sackett, Chairman, Senator Fakes, and Senator Bennett. The House has already appointed its committee. Mr. Speaker, the Senate has passed House Joint Resolution No. 35, urging the United States Olympic Committee to select Anchorage as the United States nominee for the site of the 1992 Winter Olympic Games with the following amendment, and this has been duplicated and placed on each member's limbo file. And so, House Joint Resolution No. 35, amended Senate, is transmitted for consideration. The Senate has passed the following, and they are transmitted for consideration. Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 51, Finance, by the Finance Committee, an act relating to state aid for school construction and providing for an effective date.
That'll be referred to one standing committee, Finance.
Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 65, Finance, by the Finance Committee, an act relating to housing programs and providing for an effective date.
That'll be referred to the Special Committee on Loans and the Finance Committee.
I have no further messages from the Senate, Mr. Speaker.
Do we have any other communications that should come before this body?
No, Mr. Speaker.
Reports of standing committees.
The Committee on Finance is at House Bill 88, relating to the protection of children and amending rules, amending rules 504, 505, and 506, Alaska Rules of Evidence, and Rule 6R, Alaska Rules of Criminal Procedures, under consideration, recommends it be replaced with Committee Substitute for House Bill 88, Finance, with a new title, and recommends it do pass and attaches seven new fiscal notes and a summary. The report was signed by Adams, Chairman, signing Dupass, Cotton, Binkley, Larson, Zemanski, Duncan, Frank, Adams, Rieger, Porchot, and Euling. House Bill 88 has no further referral. The Committee on Finance is at House Bill 218, Standards of Conduct of Legislators and Legislative Employees, and to the Select Committee on Legislative Ethics, under consideration, recommends it be replaced with Committee Substitute for House Bill 218, Judiciary, with the same title, and recommends it do pass and attaches a zero fiscal note. The report was signed by Adams, Chairman, signing Dupass, Adams, Ringstead, Zemanski, Duncan, Larson, Porchot, Euling, Rieger, Frank, Binkley, and Cotton. House Bill 218 appears on today's calendar. I have no further standing committee reports, Mr. Speaker.
Reports of special committees.
I have none, Mr. Speaker.
This brings us to introduction of citations and resolutions.
Citation honoring Jennifer Langan by Representative Thompson and Senator Jaroff.
Referred to rules to for calendaring.
I have no resolutions for introduction, Mr. Speaker.
Introduction, first reading, and reference of House bills.
House Bill 424 by Pinalberry, an act establishing the Board of Behavioral Science Examiners, amending Rule 504 of the Alaska Rules of Evidence and providing for an effective date.
Labor and Commerce, Judiciary, and the Finance Committee referrals.
House Bill 425 by Pierce, Hanley, and Jenkins, an act relating to the royalty value of a natural gas lease on state land and providing for an effective date.
House Special Committee on Oil and Gas and the Resources Committee.
I have no further bills for introduction, Mr. Speaker.
This brings us to the consideration of the daily calendar. Would the clerk please read Representative Clarkson?
Mr. Speaker, under messages from the Senate today, we received a message with regard to a bill very similar to House Bill 191. Therefore, I move and ask unanimous consent that House Bill 191 be removed from the calendar and returned to the Finance Committee.
Are there any objections? Hearing no objections, so ordered. Would the clerk at this time please read the next item on today's calendar?
House Bill No. 236 by Pinalberry, Collins, Cotton, Copen, and Martin, Ringstad, Zemanski, and Boucher. Oh, excuse me, I've got them out of order.
Yeah. Yeah.
Thank you.
Representative Maru.
Mr. Speaker, what happened to HB 218? Did I miss something here?
This is being taken care of, Representative Maru.
Thank you.
House Bill No. 218 by Porchot, Hurley, M. M. Miller, Clarkson, Davis, Navarre, Grunberg, Pettijohn, Pierce, and Kopanen. An act relating to standards of conduct of legislators and legislative employees and to the Select Committee on Legislative Ethics and providing for an effective date. The Committee on State Affairs is at House Bill 218 under consideration and recommends it do pass and reports it back as follows and attaches a fiscal note. The report was signed by Hurley, Chairman, signing Dupass, Hurley, Navarre, M.M. Miller, Cato, and Boucher. Signing pass with amendments, Jenkins and Collins. The Committee on Judiciary has had House Bill 218 under consideration and recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for House Bill 218 Judiciary with the same title and recommends it do pass. The report was signed by M.M. Miller, Chairman. Signing do pass, M.M. Miller, Son, Grunberg, Phillips, Pettijohn, Clarkson, and Taylor. The Committee on Finance has had House Bill 218 under consideration and recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for House Bill 218 Judiciary with the same title, recommends it do pass, and attaches a zero fiscal note. The report was signed by Adams, Chairman. Signing do pass, Adams, Ringstad, Zemanski, Duncan, Larson, Porchot, Euling, Rieger, Frank, Binkley, and Cotton. I have one committee substitute on my desk, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Clarkson.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that Judiciary Committee substitute for House Bill 218 be considered in lieu of the original bill.
Are there any objections to the adoption of the committee substitute Judiciary? Hearing no objections, the committee substitute has been adopted. Do we have any further amendments before us?
Amendment number 1 by Martin. Page 5, line 21, add new bill section. Section 12, AS 246090 is repealed. Renumber following section accordingly.
Representative Martin.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move the amendment.
Hearing objections, proceed, Representative.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Speaker, as you know, and as the members who struggled with this bill for almost 3 years know, that one of the major thorns of contention has always been the nepotism clause. And what this short amendment does is repeal it. Because I think what we have in this so-called ethic bill is an honoree that should not be allowed. Basically, what we do is discriminate against traditional families, traditional married people. However, anyone else that chooses any other lifestyle that is acceptable nowadays can have their close relationship accepted as secretaries, as working in any agencies, at working any place. There's no clause to prohibit someone else of a different lifestyle from being employed under any agencies or within the legislative body. And I feel it's a discrimination against traditional families that should be eliminated. Thank you.
Any further debate on amendment number 1? Representative Clarkson.
Mr. Speaker, I oppose the amendment. I was on one of the conference committees on this bill last year when it passed the legislature and was actively involved then. And the question of nepotism has come up several times. And I agree with the sponsor of the amendment that there is some inequity in the fact that if you are married, your spouse can't work for you. But if you are not married but simply living with someone, that girlfriend or boyfriend can live with you. Can work with you. So I think that they can also live with you, too. I think there is some inequity. However, I think that the solution, if there is one, and I'm not sure there is not to delete the section entirely. Frankly, Mr. Speaker, the public, I do not believe, is prepared to eliminate prohibitions or to support eliminating prohibitions on nepotism. That is, the section that's being eliminated is a restriction on the legislature hiring relatives. And I think that the perception of the public, rightly or wrongly, is that that is inappropriate conduct. Therefore, I oppose the amendment.
Representative Pierce.
Mr. Speaker, I call the House on this, on the
House
whole bill.
Has been on the bill? House, or call of the House has been placed on the bill. Representative Furness.
Speaker, we have a brief at ease. I wanted to look at the statute language now under the 24 sections, who would see.
The House, please stand at ease. Will the House come back to order?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
The call of the House has not been satisfied yet. Is there any further debate on amendment number 1? Representative Martin.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The gentleman, the majority leader, is quite right that it's a matter of public perception. And I think that this year we have been very careful of that. And I think that most people around the state feel that the legislature today had been conducting itself in a very orderly manner, and so we get a lot of pluses there. But then also the public perception can be deceived. And I think that we should be clear that we are not deceiving the public, especially on an issue of this nature. Mr. Speaker, the section does not just go to your spouse as far as nepotism. It goes to your children, your grandchildren, your mother, your fathers, your brothers, your sisters, your in-laws. And we all know, sir, that there's the possibility, and it has happened last year, where people do start their second married life. And in a second married life, they inherit both ways, children, stepchildren, spouses all over the place. Now suddenly these... Now suddenly this nepotism clause reaches to all those people who may legitimately, by the law, lose their jobs or have to be removed or only allowed to work at certain sections of the year and not the whole term of a normal employment job. So the nepotism clause is very far-reaching. Now, here again, it's discriminatory only in the sense if you make the mistake and traditionally get married, then all those relatives are deprived of opportunities of legitimate employment. If you say, well, we're not going to do that, we're just going to have a common law relationship, then everyone is safely employed in any direction they want to be. I think we have to clean it up, sir.
Any further debate on Amendment Number 1? Representative Maru.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd just like to remind this body and other people listening that although we have a law against nepotism now, it isn't working. We do have nepotism, but we don't call it nepotism. Currently, legislators' spouses and relatives can and do work as lobbyists and as members of the executive branch. We don't call that nepotism, but it is nepotism. The definition of nepotism, which is currently in the law, is wrong and doesn't work and is not inclusive. Therefore, I think that there is some merit to this amendment.
Representative Cotton, you are seeking the floor.
Speaker, as I was reading 2460090, and the minority leader referred to who could and could not work, and I'm not sure that I understood him. The 090 says an individual who's related to means a child, stepchild, husband, wife, mother, father, sister, or brother. So in-laws don't count, and I think that he suggested that they did. And maybe I misunderstood him, but that's not the way I read it.
Representative Martin, do you concur?
Yes, Mr. Speaker, if I may address that, thank you. I conclude, and may be wrong, that when you say stepchildren, that is because of the new marriage that you inherit this new family, and therefore you will have in-laws of that marriage. I may be wrong, but that's the way I interpret it.
Are you ready for the question? The question is, shall Amendment Number 1 be adopted? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Would the clerk please lock the roll? Does any member desire to change his or her vote? Clerk, please tally the board.
6 yeas, 33 nays.
Amendment Number 1 has failed adoption. Does the clerk have any further amendments upon her desk?
Amendment Number 2 by Mr. Martin. Page 2, line 29. Insert a new section 5 as follows. And has it been...
I'm going to do it now.
Representative Martin.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move the amendment and ask for a short and brief at ease way. These may be passed out, sir.
Would the House please stand at ease? Will the House come back to order? The call is not satisfied. Representative Martin, Amendment Number 2.
Yes, sir. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. The Second Amendment is offered with sincerity because I know over the past few years a lot of the members have discussed the problems with the nepotism clause. Yes, the public perception is that we're going to hire everyone within the family first. I did move the amendment, that's why I was wondering. Okay. So as a suggested compromise to this problem, and it has been done on no less than four different occasions. In the past, Mr. Speaker, one clause that we had said common law status, and then through the normal process, that was deleted. And then over in the Senate, at one time they added, or living within common law status, or marriage arrangement, or sexual partner, and eventually that got deleted. Then last year, from my legal service, the latest clause was, or who is sexual partner of a member, whether the relationship is formal or informal of. Now this year, the phrase that's supposed to be acceptable to everyone and anyone is, or a person of the opposite or same sex who is cohabitating with a member of the legislators. And I take that serious because cohabitation had been used in other laws too. So I emphasize those various clauses that we had before because I think everyone realizes the problem and that the perception is very narrow as far as what we are presenting to the public. And that if we really want to have all the questions of relationships solved as far as employment goes, we have to go a little further than the traditional family. Thank you.
Representative Clocks.
Mr. Speaker, again, it's an admirable try, but I don't think it works. I read cohabitation to mean living in the same dwelling, and that would exclude roommates, and I don't think that's fair. That goes too far.
Are you ready for the question on amendment number 2? Representative Szymanski.
Yeah, I guess I'm going to have to can't let this one by. I'm going to have to ask the maker of the amendment. Could one more time. Give me your definition of cohabitation.
Representative Martin.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'm glad they asked that. From a U.S. Supreme Court decision, cohabitation is a sexual relationship.
Representative Pettyjohn.
Mr. Speaker, I would offer a friendly amendment on line 2, after person, delete of the opposite or same sex. I don't think there's anything. I'm trying to think of something, if it's the same sex or the opposite sex, if there's something we're excluding there. I don't think we are. So I think that language is surplusage and should be deleted, and if the maker of the amendment would not object, I would offer that as an amendment to the amendment.
That would have to be in writing on the clerk's desk. Perhaps we should just leave the amendment alone. The call of the House has not been satisfied, so let's have some fun with this. Representative Clarkson, the House please stand at ease. Would the House come back to order? We now have before us an amendment to the amendment. Would the clerk please read that amendment?
Amendment to amendment number 2 by Pettyjohn. Page 1, lines 2 through 3, delete of the opposite or same sex.
I move to the amendment, Mr. Speaker. Passed unanimous consent.
Are there any objections to the amendment to the amendment? Hearing no objections, the amendment to the amendment has been adopted. Representative Szymanski.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I just was consulting with the maker of this amendment, and he has considered a friendly amendment to strike the word cohabitation and replace it with sexual relationship. And based on that, I'd just like to offer that as a friendly amendment.
That would have to be reduced to writing and on the clerk's desk.
Thank you.
Need not be for all members of the body, but it must be on the clerk's desk. Would the House please stand at ease? Will the House please come back to order? We have submitted to us an amendment to the already amended number 2. Would the clerk please read the amendment?
Amended by Szymanski. After the word in on the third line, delete the word cohabitation and insert sexual relationship. Is that right?
Right. Representative Szymanski, would you move that?
I'd move and ask unanimous consent for the amendment of the amendment.
I hear objections. Are you ready for the question?
Wait a minute.
The question is, shall the amendment to the already amended amendment number 2 be adopted? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Would the clerk please lock the roll? Does any member wish to change his or her vote? Representative Boucher.
I'm struggling with the definition of the word.
Representative Boucher, you may not discuss your reasons for your vote when we're under roll call. Does any other member wish to change his or her vote? Would the clerk please take the roll?
10 yeas, 29 nays.
The amendment to the already amended number 2 has failed adoption. Representative Navarre.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Could we revert to introduction, I guess?
Are there any objections? Proceed, Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. In Gallery B, it gives me great pleasure to introduce two constituents of mine and Representative Maruz from the Kenai Peninsula Borough School District, Roy Barton and Dix Warner.
Under introduction of guests, yes. Representative Furness.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Under introduction of guests, in Gallery B, gives me a great deal of pleasure of introducing a very young constituent. In fact, I think she's about 3 years old, Katie Meyer. She's the daughter of Becky Meyer, one of my aides.
Representative Gruenberg.
Mr. Speaker, back on the main motion, the amendment. I was frankly under a misimpression at first because the majority leader had indicated one possible definition and the minority leader another. I did a little research during the at ease. AS01.10.040, words and phrases, says, words and phrases shall be construed according to the rules of grammar and according to their common and approved usage. Technical words and phrases are which have acquired a peculiar and appropriate meaning, whether by legislative definition or otherwise, shall be construed according to the peculiar and appropriate meaning. I then looked up the term cohabitation in Webster's New World Dictionary, and the primary definition is to live together as husband and wife, especially when not legally married.
Representative Penny Alberry.
Mr. Speaker, if the previous speaker would look down to the next definition in the dictionary, in Webster's New World Dictionary, the word cohabitant, a person living together with another or others. So that would include roommates.
Are you ready for the question? Representative Martin, summary arguments.
Yes, sir. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. You know, we've had a lot of fun with this, and we had laughs last year and the year before, but I take it as very, very serious. And someday I may have guts enough to bring forth cases before this so-called ethics board and bring out particulars so that people will get straight in their heads what is different lifestyles and how it is discriminatory against traditional families. Mr. Speaker, I thank the gentleman from Spinard for reading that because it goes right in line with what the U.S. Supreme Court did say at common law status. I forgot that word that they equate the two as cohabitation. And the drafters in the original version today meant that. But since the gentleman from South Anchorage put in sexual relationship, I didn't mind that at all because that's what they put in the draft last year as being more explicit in the relationship that we were trying to establish. I do think that it's a very serious matter and that the perception that is portrayed to the public is wrong and that we have to discriminate, stop discrimination because of different lifestyles. Thank you.
Are you ready for the question? The question, shall amendment number 2, as amended, be adopted? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Would the clerk please lock the roll? Does any member desire to change his or her vote? Would the clerk please tally the board?
14 yeas, 25 nays.
Amendment number 2 has failed adoption. Would the clerk at this time please read Amendment number 3?
Amendment number 3 by Martin. Page 2, line 29. New section 5, insert. And has this one been distributed? It is on each member's desk.
Representative Martin.
Mr. Speaker, I move the amendment. Ask unanimous consent.
Hearing objections, proceed, Representative.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Speaker, this particular amendment brings out one of the honorees of so-called public perception. We say that we will not allow any nepotism within the legislature. The honoree is if your wife or your spouse or whoever it is can work for the other house, that's okay. But they cannot work for the house that you happen to be in. So who are we deceiving? The public reads the bill, nepotism, and they don't understand one house or the other, the interim session or the regular session. They just know nepotism is not allowed in the legislature. And we're deceiving them. By this clause, it's an either-or thing. If they're going to be allowed to work in one house, why not allow them to work in the other house? I see no problem with that. If you're going to allow your spouse to work, let them work. If you're going to have people working in common law status, let them work. Either way. But this one here would decrease some of the deception that's going on. I ask for its unanimous approval.
Representative Clarkson.
Are we on amendment number 3?
That's correct.
I oppose the amendment, Mr. Speaker. The effect of the amendment will be to prohibit members who are related, will allow members who are related to House members to work for House members during the, I'm sorry, that's not correct. The effect of the amendment is to loosen the nepotism provision, not tighten it. Therefore, I oppose it.
Representative Pierce.
I remove my call in the House.
The call has been removed on the bill. Representative Hanley.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to declare a conflict with this particular amendment and ask to be excused from voting.
Hearing objections, the representative must vote. Are you ready for the question?
Just one point, sir, if I may.
Representative Martin.
Mr. Speaker, in summary, please, I thank you for your courtesy. The majority leader said that it loosens, not tightens. I would like to tighten, but since everyone feels that we want to treat everyone equally, I'll treat everyone equally as far as the bill goes and allow them to work in either house.
Are you ready for the question? Representative Pinyalberry.
Mr. Speaker, I guess I too have a conflict of interest in as much as two staff members that work for this house share a dwelling with me, and if you allow me to vote, I'm going to vote against it.
Hearing objections, the representative must vote. Are you ready for the question? The question is, shall amendment number 3 be adopted? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Would the clerk please lock the roll? Does any member desire to change his or her vote? Would the clerk please tally the board?
8 yeas, 30 nays.
Amendment number 3 has failed adoption. Would the clerk please read the fourth amendment on
amendment,
her desk?
Excuse me. Amendment number 4 by Martin. Page 2, line 29, new section 5, insert.
Representative Martin.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move the amendment number 4.
Hearing objections, proceed.
Thank you, sir. This one here was pointed out to me, sir, during the summer by a very prominent person in the law profession that it is truly unconstitutional. And here again is another honoree of the perception of the public. So we say our spouse is able to work for the other body, okay? Then we say they can only do it during the session because it's obvious if they're working all year long, it may be known back home that so-and-so is the spouse of so-and-so working in that office. The point is mainly is that it's discriminatory because it limits the rights of employment for anyone who is a spouse
for a full year. You're limiting them to only the session time and not enabling them to work full-time as any other citizen, whether it's nepotism or common law or what. And I ask for its approval, sir. Thank you.
Representative Clucks.
Mr. Speaker, I oppose the amendment, although it does have the effect of tightening the nepotism provision. It produces a grammatically incorrect, or at least a confusing sentence. If the amendment were adopted, the sentence would read in primary part, a member who is related may not be employed in the house in which the legislator is a member or in either house of the legislature, which doesn't make very much sense in terms of the wording of the amendment. I would oppose the amendment.
Are you ready for the question? Representative Maru.
Mr. Speaker, I have a question for the maker, and that is that whether he might consider expanding the definition of nepotism. If we're going to get serious, let's get serious. After all, if we put a child, a stepchild, a husband, father, mother, father, sister, or brother, why shouldn't we also have a stepmother and a stepfather? Because I have a stepmother and a stepfather, and who knows, I might be tempted someday to hire them.
Representative Hanley.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I would again like to declare a conflict since I have a family member working in the other body and ask to be excused from the vote.
Hearing objections, you must vote, Representative. Are you ready for the question? The question is, shall Amendment Number 4 be adopted? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Would the clerk please lock the rolls? Does any member desire to change his or her vote? Would the clerk take the roll?
7 yeas, 28 nays.
Amendment Number 4 has failed adoption. Would the clerk at this time, will she please read Amendment Number 5?
Amendment Number 5 by Furness. Page 4, lines 28 through 29. After chapter applies, delete, or a person elected to the legislature who at the time of election is not a member of the legislature.
Representative Furness.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move the amendment and ask unanimous consent.
Proceed, Representative.
Mr. Speaker, the reason for introducing this amendment is this section, in my mind, is not clear as to what the members are intending to do. As I read it, a person can ask the committee for an advisory opinion within 30 days, and in fact, the opinion must be issued within 30 days of a person to whom this chapter applies, and normally we speak of the chapter applying to those elected officials. Then this new language says, or a person elected to the legislature who at the time of election is not a member of the legislature. And this tells me that upon being elected, let's say the election is November 3rd or whatever, that person is a successful winner, then an elected official or a public member can ask the ethics committee for an opinion on that person. If that's the meaning of this, then the big question is the applicability of it. Should we subject a person who has just received a positive vote of the public to an opinion prior to them being officially sworn in? And if I'm wrong, then I will recant. But it appears to be the situation, Mr. Speaker, and I'm not sure we want to do it that way.
Representative Porchot.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Well, I would hope to get a recanting by the former speaker here in an explanation. The existing statute does cover, if you turn to page 1, line 22, number 2, it does cover people elected who at the time of election are not members of the legislature. All the attempt on changing this language on page 4 was to cover neophytes like myself who may be elected in November, who under the current way those statutes are written cannot come to the Legislative Ethics Committee and ask a question like, my wife works for so-and-so, is that a conflict of interest? Under the way the current statutes are construed, I am covered, but I can't ask information of the committee. So all the language here would allow is that people elected in November who now are the Legislative Committee on Ethics is required to send them information on the do's and don'ts When they get that or they're informed of the ethics bill and they have a question, they can in turn are entitled to seek advice of the committee, and hopefully it'll clear up some of the confusion that I know myself and many of us faced literally on the first day of session.
Representative Clarkson.
Mr. Speaker, let me clarify. I think the former speaker is slightly incorrect about his interpretation. If you look on page 1, lines 22 and 23, you will see that people, between the time they're elected and the time they get sworn in, are not covered by this legislation. They are not covered by the ethics law. The effect of the Judiciary Committee substitute would cover them for purposes only of advisory opinions. So that between the time you're elected and the time you're sworn in, you can ask for an advisory opinion to figure out what you have to do once you're sworn in. But you are not covered by the other provisions of the law until you're sworn in.
Any further debate on Amendment Number 5? Representative Furness.
Well, Mr. Speaker, I guess my concern is this. I think it is generally held that a person is not an official member of this body until they have been officially sworn in. Now, I think I understand somewhat the rationale as to what the member is proposing to do, that is, to be able to clarify some questions. But by the same token, let's say you've got a very heated election. You've got two members fighting like cats and dogs, as we've well seen in some of our elections. And perhaps there may have been some questionable information on this person. It appears to me, since the public can also ask for an advisory opinion in addition to... Okay, well, let me go back. I see the shaking of the head that the public cannot ask for that. I'll have to double-check that. I believe that I'm correct. But, Mr. Speaker, another legislator, let's say of the same party, could ask for an opinion on a member of the other party, and it may be something that may be vindictive or whatever, beyond the scope of what that member ought to be asking. It appears to me that if a person needed a courtesy opinion, they could go to the Attorney General's office, they could go through Mr. Barry under the legislative agency or whatever they're called for that courtesy advice, but a member should not be covered under this until they're actually sworn in by the Lieutenant Governor, and that's my position on that. I think this it's well intended, but when you look at the other ramifications, I think it may go beyond what we are considering in this narrow scope under the language as it is now. So I propose that I don't think we want to do that.
Representative Miller.
Just want to emphasize that this section only only applies to advisory opinions, and advisory opinions can only be asked by a member regarding himself or herself. I can't ask for an advisory opinion regarding the conduct of the colleague to my left or right here. That's been found, by the Ethics Committee, researched by our judicial people, and that was the decision they came to and which we adopted as policy, because that's the way the law is written. So only the legislator, himself or herself, can ask for an advisory opinion. You couldn't even find a friendly legislator who'd been elected to ask one for you, and it's certainly no threat to you because nobody else can ask for one regarding you. Only the elected legislator can ask for an advisory opinion. Now, a complaint is an entirely different matter. Anybody can bring a complaint if they want to against a legislator, although they, bloody well better be prepared to prove it. Because there are penalty provisions in that. In fact, we'll get into that in the bill. But this does not apply. This provision here does not apply to the complaint procedure. This applies only to the advisory procedure, which only the legislator himself or herself can request. So this is therefore their protection. Thank you.
Question. Ready for the question. The question is, shall Amendment Number 5 be adopted? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Would the clerk please lock the rolls? Does any member desire to change his or her vote? Would the clerk please tally the board?
6 yeas, 33 nays.
Amendment number 5. Adoption. Representative Sun.
Mr. Speaker, could we move up the calendar to introduction of guests?
Are there any objections? Proceed, Representative.
Mr. Speaker, it gives me a great honor to introduce the parents of one of my staff people, Howard Wayne from Wrangell, but Phil and Kathy Wayne are with us from my fellow colleague, Mr. Taylor's hometown. Appreciate your welcome.
Any further guests for introduction? Representative Jenkins.
Mr. Speaker, another constituent of mine, Joe Roganbuck, is in Gallery A.
Representative Cato.
I'd like to introduce in Gallery A, Chief of Police of the City of Seward, Louis Bencardino.
Any further guests for introduction? Does the clerk have any further amendments upon her desk?
No, Mr. Speaker.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that the Judiciary Committee substitute for House Bill 218 be considered engrossed, advanced to third reading, and placed on final passage.
Are there any objections to the advancement from second to third reading? Hearing no objections, will the clerk please read the bill for the third time?
Committee substitute for House Bill 218, Judiciary, by the Judiciary Committee. An act relating to standards of conduct of legislators and legislative employees and to the Select Committee on Legislative Ethics and providing for an effective date.
Is there any debate? Representative Porchot.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I think there's two main objectives that we're seeking through enactment of legislative ethics laws. One is to set out in law the specific actions of the code of conduct that lawmakers and other people should be following. And the second is to lay out the procedures and the mechanisms to enforce those laws. Last year's ethics bill, I think, went a long way in achieving the first objective by replacing the existing vagaries of common law with a specific code of conduct. However, that bill fell far short in convincing the public that the rules that we laid out would be diligently and objectively enforced. No sooner was the ink dried on the ethics bill than the public criticism started pouring in of whitewash. Two major criticisms were leveled. One, the first, was that the bill contained only token public participation on the enforcing ethics committee, leaving the impression that the fox was in charge of the chicken coop. And the second major objection was the inclusion within that bill of a clearly tagged on clause that made false accusation a felony. That had all the markings of a deliberate attempt to discourage anyone from ever bringing a complaint before the ethics committee. The bill before you corrects these two flaws and also addresses several other ambiguities and contradictions and some flat-out glitches in last year's law. I passed out to the members a sectional analysis that contains the provisions that are currently in the CS for HB 218. And very briefly, the major points would be an expansion of the public membership on the Legislative Ethics Committee from one public member to three members. Those members, rather than being selected by the legislature, would be appointed by the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court and ratified then or confirmed by the both bodies. And it also reduces from a felony to a misdemeanor the so-called false reporting provisions. Hopefully that will not be such a barrier to legitimate complaints to be brought before the Ethics Committee. It also clarifies that all legislative employees over the level of an 18 are covered. There was some confusion over last year's bill, which legislative employees were covered and which were not. We felt in an effort of fairness and comprehensiveness that all legislative employees, whether they work for committee staff or House research, should be covered by the bill over the level 18 or range 18. It also clears up on page 2, there are several other contradictions in the law dealing with exemptions for family members on lobbyist disclosures. We moved up the reporting deadline from the first day of the session to the fifth day of the session to give people a chance again to clarify their personal situations and conflicts and allow time for them to put their required notices into the record. Mr. Chairman, I think, or Mr. Speaker, I think this bill does go a long way in helping to reinstill public confidence in the legislature, and I would commend it to the body.
Question. Representative Clarkson.
Mr. Speaker, I just want to take this opportunity to thank the prime sponsor of this legislation. For those that struggled through the ethics battles of last year and the year before, you know that the issue is a very sensitive and controversial one. And the sponsor of this legislation produced a very sensitive and intelligent solution to many of the problems that we had over the last couple of years. I think he's done a real fine job, and I support the legislation.
Representative Phillips.
Mr. Speaker, what I'm about to say is I don't want to get in a debate on it, but some of the points that the first speaker said about the original ethics bill to me is a little inaccurate. We were working under unusual circumstances, and it was a very controversial subject, and it went through many, many drafts, and there were many, many people involved in it. And I certainly supported it to have more public members last year, but apparently the other body did not concur with our attitude over here in the House side. I do think that the most important feature of this bill is providing for more public members and public participation on the ethics legislation. But I just don't want to downgrade or degrade what this body did last year and the year before on the ethics legislation. Because all I'm saying is we've come a long ways.
Representative Furness.
Yes, Mr. Speaker. I have a question, and then after that is answered, I do have some comments. Question for my own edification is, our staff, legislative staff, considered employees of the legislator, or are they employees of the legislative agency? Maybe someone can answer that question.
Representative Porcho.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the former speaker, if I understood your question, it probably, under the bill in front of us, all legislative employees, whether they're personal staff, committee staff, or so-called legislative agency staff, over the range, or range 18 or above, would be covered. Currently, the law is ambiguous. There was some, if you go back and talk to the people involved, it was never their intention to discriminate or differentiate between different classes, but the legal department has interpreted the existing statute to only include employees of legislative agencies, that would be like House Research or Legal Division, and not personal or committee staff.
Representative Furness.
Well, Mr. Speaker, I still don't think the question has been answered. I'm referring to page 1, line 14 and 15. It says this chapter applies to members of the legislature. To a person employed by the member of the legislature or a permanent or temporary employee of the agency of the legislature. As I recall, my staff is actually signed up and employed by the legislative agency. Now, my question again, perhaps the finance chairman, perhaps the majority leader, or the member from Juneau can answer this. Are those employees considered my personal employees, or is there a contract between the people I hire and the Legislative Affairs Agency? I think that's a critical question in dealing with it.
Representative Klox.
Mr. Speaker, again, in response, assuming this bill were passed, the answer to the question would be that it wouldn't make any difference. They are covered by this legislation, if they're range 18 and above, regardless of who hires them, regardless of who the contract is with, if they're either employed by a member of the legislature or an agency.
Representative Duncan.
May we have an adage, please?
Would the House please stand? Will the House come back to order? Before the recess, we have committee substitute for House Bill 218 Judiciary before us in third reading, and we are under debate. Representative Furness, I believe at that point you had the floor. Representative Furness?
Yes, Mr. Speaker. I think the question has been answered. I checked with the member from Juneau, who is an active member of the Ethics Committee. Mr. Speaker, if a question came up at this very moment prior to the passage of this legislation, legislative employees are actually considered employees of the Legislative Affairs Agency. What the sponsor of this bill has done is somewhat separated those persons out. I look here on page 5, the new definition. Persons employed by a member of the legislature means a person who is employed by an individual legislator or by a legislative body other than an agency of the legislature. So I think it is quite clear. I had originally looked at this as being redundant. Mr. Speaker, if I may just make some closing remarks on the legislation. A few minutes ago, I had an amendment to strike the language on page 4. Let me share with the body. I think the member from Juneau, again, is correct that under the present legislation, a member can only ask for an advisory opinion concerning something having to do with that person. However, I think the member from Juneau will admit that under actual practice, a member can ask for an advisory opinion based upon a what-if or hypothetical question. As an example, if a member felt that another member is doing something incorrect, the member can ask for an advisory opinion and that the committee must respond in writing. What if, to the committee, I go out and I commit a certain act? Is that considered a violation? The committee writes back and says, yes, that is considered a violation. Well, Mr. Speaker, what this section permits here is that the member can take that written opinion and perhaps use it against another member, and that member has not even been sworn in. Now, that is an actual ability that is there now. It has been used at least several times. I still object to including members, including an ability to be able to get information on members, because I think it can be abused prior to that member being officially sworn in by this body. And I think we need to take serious note of what I'm telling you here, because it's there, and I'm not sure this body want to include this language with those possibilities there.
Representative Boucher.
Mr. Speaker, I agree that there has been some progress in this area, and I've listened to the debate of sexual orientation and whether we who we employ, but I think we've still got a long ways to go. For example, I think we ought to be addressing should we or shouldn't we, as long as we're employed, be directly or indirectly involved in consulting contracts. Should or shouldn't a business that's owned by any legislature, directly or indirectly, be doing business with a state or municipality where cash dollars are flowing in? I, for one, absolutely, I do not think they should be. And I think this is the area that we've seen with the North Slope thing. This is where the abuses are. And we ought to be taking a look at the real problem, which is not whether we hire mom and pop, but rather dollars are flowing into individuals' pockets, either directly or indirectly, through contracts because you are a legislature. I think this is a step forward, and I, too, commend Representative from Anchorage for the hard work that he's done. But we're still not dealing with the things that are making the headlines that concern people about the honesty and integrity of members of the legislative body. And I sincerely hope that this is a step toward doing that, and we don't walk away patting ourselves on the back simply because we're not employing our wife or what have you, because we haven't really addressed the problem with public confidence and how we deal with ourselves in legislative matters. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Are you ready for the question? Representative Maru.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I question the wisdom and, in fact, the need for this, because where do we stop if we are including staff now? What about next week or next year? The staff spouses, the families, the cousins of the staffs, where do we draw the line? I mentioned earlier that nepotism apparently does not include my stepmother or my stepfather, nor does it include my sister-in-law, nor does it include any one of my three brothers-in-law. Now, if I were really out to pass money around and hire somebody that would be just outside the range of the law, I could certainly do it. So I question, where are we going to draw the line? And this particular bill, it on the one hand, attempts to extend enforcement to more people, and on the other hand, it lessens the penalty from a felony to a misdemeanor, if I understand it. So therefore, what's the sense of it? We extend the range, but we lessen the penalty. It's been said, and I think it's a truism, you cannot legislate morality. And I suspect that you cannot legislate ethics either.
Are you ready for the question? The question is, shall the House adopt committee substitute for House Bill 218 Judiciary? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Would the clerk please lock the roll? Does any member desire to change his or her vote? Would the clerk tally the board?
37 yeas, 1 nay.
Committee substitute for House Bill 218 Judiciary has passed the House. Representative Clarkson.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that the roll call vote on final passage of Judiciary Committee substitute for House Bill 218 be considered the roll call on the effective date clause.
Are there any objections to the adoption of the effective date clause? Hearing no objections, the effective date clause has been adopted. Would the clerk at this time please read the next item of business on our daily calendar?
House Bill number 236 by Pinal-Berry, Collins, Cotton, Copen, and Martin, Ringstad, Zemanski, and Boucher, an act creating a quadrennial Olympic reserve account and providing for an effective date. The Committee on State Affairs has had the bill under consideration, recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for House Bill 236, State Affairs, with the same title, and recommends it do pass, and attaches a zero fiscal note with an analysis and a fiscal note. The report was signed by Hurley, Chairman, signing do pass, Hurley, Navarre, Jenkins, Collins, Boucher, and M.M. Miller. The Committee on Finance has had the bill under consideration, recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for House Bill 236, Finance, with the same title, reports it back as follows, and attaches a new fiscal note. The report was signed by Adams, Chairman, signing do pass, Adams, Ringstad, and Zemanski. Citing no recommendation, Duncan, Larson, Euling, Frank, and Rieger. Signing do not pass, Cotton, and signing do not pass without amendment, Porchot. I have two committee substitutes on my desk, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Clarkson.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent the Finance Committee substitute for House Bill 236 be considered in lieu of the original bill.
Are there any objections to the adoption of the committee substitute Finance? Hearing no objections, the committee substitute has been adopted. Do we have any further amendments before us?
No, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Szymanski.
Mr. Speaker, I need a brief at ease. I'm drafting an amendment.
The House, please stand at ease. Oh, I'm sorry. Mike. Will the House come back to order? We have before us, still in second reading, committee substitute for House Bill 236, Finance. Representative Clarkson.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that the Finance Committee substitute for House Bill 236 be placed at the bottom of today's calendar.
Are there any objections? Hearing no objections, so ordered. Representative Maru.
I ask unanimous consent to go back up the calendar for a moment to introduction of guests.
Are there any objections? Proceed, Representative.
I'd like to introduce a member of the Kenai Peninsula Borough Assembly, Marie Wally. I don't know if she's on the other side. She was the president of the Kenai Peninsula Borough Assembly, Marilyn Dimmick. Is she over there? Not over there.
Any further guests for introduction? Would the clerk at this time please read the next item on today's calendar?
House Bill number 392 by the Rules Committee by request of the Governor, an act relating to the acquisition and development of state office and prison facilities and providing for an effective date. The Committee on Finance has had the bill under consideration and recommends it do pass. Report was signed by Adams, Chairman, signing do pass, Adams, Ringstad, Zemanski, Cotton, Euling, and Larson. Signing no recommendation, Duncan, Rieger, Porchot, and Frank. I have no amendments on my desk, Mr. Speaker.
Having no amendments, Representative Clarkson.
Mr. Speaker, I request a roll call vote to determine whether a quorum call to determine whether we have 30 members present.
Would the members at this time please indicate their presence by voting for a quorum call? Has any member failed to vote? The clerk, please tally the board.
30 members present.
We have a quorum present to conduct business. Representative Clarkson.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that House Bill 392 be considered engrossed, advanced to third reading, and placed on final passage.
Are there any objections to the advancement from second to third reading? Hearing no objections, would the clerk please read the bill for the third time?
House Bill number 392 by the Rules Committee by request of the Governor, an act relating to the acquisition and development of state office and prison facilities and providing for an effective date.
Is there any debate? Are you ready? Representative Furness.
Speaker, I'd like to place a call on the House. I think this is an important piece of legislation. All members should be here.
A call has been placed upon the House on the bill. Is there any debate? Representative
Speaker,
Furness?
I do have some debate on this. I'm just very rapidly coming up to speed on this. As I understand the legislation, the administration or department, which I assume is the administration here, can enter into a lease to finance a particular space or whatever. And although it is subject to an annual appropriation by the legislature, I guess my major concern here is that you enter into a lease. As I recall, to use a specific example, the prison facility in Whittier was slated to cost over the lifetime of that project about $180 million. That is taking the lease payments over the 20-year period of time. Now, that's fine if the legislature on the stand is going to cost that over a period of time and we vote to approve that lease, then that commits us to the annual appropriation towards that lease, provided the state treasurer is sufficient to cover it, or we need to institute some type of tax to cover it. But, Mr. Speaker, just looking at this piece of legislation, it doesn't do it. Gives the administration an opportunity to go out and enter into a lease. We don't know the dollar amount of that lease, the terms of that lease, or the ultimate effect on the state treasurer of that lease. I think it's admirable that they brought this to us, but it just doesn't go far enough, and I would ask the members to give serious consideration on not passing this legislation.
Representative Szymanski.
Well, the representative from Muldoon sure got me confused on this one, because when we reviewed this legislation, this is precisely the legislation that was demanded by the legislature to ensure that the office building in Anchorage, the facilities in Fairbanks, that the prison in Seward and other similar type of lease purchase arrangements do not, and hear my words, do not proceed without explicit legislative approval. It's this legislation that we've demanded, and I think it's our prerogative, to have that in statute, to demand that the legislature approve any lease purchase. Absent this legislation, you're going to potentially see an office building in Anchorage and other facilities entered into in a lease purchase arrangement. For several years now, we've argued the statutes on it, and this is clarification that gains us that strength. If we pass this law, it's on the books. The administration cannot proceed with a lease purchase without explicit authorization. And maybe the Representative Muldoon, now it's had time to read the legislation. Thank you.
The call has been satisfied. Is there any further debate? Representative Furness.
Yes, Mr. Speaker, just one final comment. I have read the last paragraph here, and if I may share it with the body. The department may not enter into an agreement under this subsection unless the office, facility, or project to be provided for has been specifically approved by the legislature by law. I support the legislation based upon the understanding of this section of the bill, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Yulee.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I, too, support the legislation. It went through some scrutiny up in the Finance Committee. And I think this is one of the first bills I've seen this session where we actually give the power back to the legislature to make rational decisions and in regard to projects. And this would put it in the hands of the legislature. And before a project could proceed under a lease financing agreement, it would have to be approved by the legislature. And I think it's one of the first bills I've seen that have come across this body that gives the prerogative to the legislature. We just haven't had that opportunity with the other bills the governor's introduced.
Representative Martin.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'm supportive of the legislature, but I do have a problem with the deleting of the current law on the bottom of page 1, line 29, over to page 2. And it seems to me the gentleman from South Anchorage expressed the right idea that the legislators do want. But I wonder why we are deleting the section that is already in law. And it says the use of spatial provided lease and contract had been expressly approved by the legislator by concurrent resolution. So why are we deleting that? Are we retroactively changing something? We know today that there's been a lot of comments over the past 2 years about leasing and about purchasing and about contracts, and yet it seems to me we had the right already. The new language more explicitly say what our rights are.
Representative Clarkson.
Mr. Speaker, the deleted language is already invalid because of the Supreme Court decision in the Teamster Alive case, which said that the legislature may not act on such matters by concurrent resolution.
So by deleting this language, changing it to lease purchase, changing it to a law rather than a resolution, we now have a binding provision that does give legislative review.
Representative Rieger.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And just to comment on the bill, I think that this legislation does improve the present situation. However, some of the comments I think are valid, that the legislature under this approves a facility or a project, and from that point forward, the administration is obligated to provide notice of the cost, but they still have the green light to go ahead and proceed with that project with the cost without a requirement for a second approval of the cost by the legislature. I think that this is an improvement, and therefore I'm going to vote for the legislation, but I think that we haven't addressed the final question yet, which is, what if we don't agree with the final cost when it's noticed back to us? Thank you.
Representative Pettyjohn.
I'm going to inquire of the body if anybody disagrees with my interpretation of this, and if nobody does, I'm going to offer a letter of intent. But as I understand this provision, subsection B, if the administration wants to enter into an agreement for the construction of the Anchorage office building or the Seward prison, they have to come back before the legislature and get a bill before that can proceed. If that is the intent of the legislature, to me, we might consider putting a letter of intent into that effect, because specific approval by the legislature by law can be interpreted to mean an appropriation. There have been appropriations for Seward, I believe, in the past. There's probably going to be some appropriation for Seward this year. And I don't want anybody to come back and say, well, you approved the Seward prison by appropriating money for it last year or this year, and therefore the requirements of this subsection for that project or the Anchorage office project would have been met.
Representative Furness.
Yes, I'm going to lift the call on the House, Mr. Speaker.
The call has been lifted. Are you ready for the question? Representative Sun.
Yeah, brief at ease.
At this time, I place the call back on the House. Will the House please stand at ease? Would the House come back to order? Before the recess, we have House Bill 392 before us in third reading. Representative Pettyjohn.
Mr. Speaker, I move that we return to second reading for the purposes of a specific amendment, which is on the clerk's desk.
The clerk, please read that amendment at this time.
Amendment number 1 by Pettyjohn. Page 1, line 29. After law, insert other than an appropriation.
Representative Pettyjohn.
Mr. Speaker, this would clarify an ambiguity. There is a legal opinion that the phrase by law includes a simple line item appropriation and an appropriation bill. And that is not my intent. I don't think it's the intent of most of the members that such an item could constitute approval of a lease financing agreement, which in fact may not even be in effect at the time the appropriation is made. So I urge the body to allow us to return to second reading.
The motion before us is to move back to second reading for the purpose of an amendment. Representative Adams?
Yes. Before I object, I've got a question of the maker of this. What does it do for past appropriations such as the Seward prison?
Representative Pettyjohn.
In my opinion, Mr. Speaker, the Seward prison would have to be approved by this legislature in a bill, and that past appropriations for that prison would not constitute legislative approval.
Do we have objections to removing back down to second reading? Are you ready for the question? The question is, shall House Bill 392 be returned to second reading for the purpose of a specific amendment? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Would the clerk please lock the roll? Does any member desire to change his or her vote? Would the clerk please tally the board?
25 yeas, 14 nays.
We are in second reading. Representative Pettyjohn.
Mr. Speaker, I move amendment number 1.
there objections to Amendment Number 1? Proceed, Representative.
Mr. Speaker, with regard to the Seward prison, I am in favor of that facility. I will vote for it when the appropriate time comes. However, before I would vote for it, I would want to know exactly how the administration was proceeding with regard to financing it. If they were entering into lease financing agreements or lease purchase agreements, I would want that knowledge available to me so I could make a decision on whether or not that was an appropriate manner in which to proceed with that facility. And the purpose of the amendment is to give the legislature that ability that to oversee and approve that project in the Anchorage office building or any other construction project that involves these complicated and sometimes occasionally controversial ways of financing construction projects. And I urge the body to approve the amendment.
Representative Sund.
Mr. Speaker, I'm going to speak in favor of the amendment. I feel fairly strongly on this issue. I think we're talking about debt and long-term debt of the state and that how that affects the debt situation, it affects the general bonding situation, and whether it's called GO bonds or whether it's called long-term debt, that's how it all comes out of how much debt we have to pay. And if we're going to take and lay that debt out into the future of this state, I think the issue should not only at least come to the legislative process, but I almost feel it should go to a vote of the people.
Representative Gruenberg.
Mr. Speaker, I generally support the amendment too, but I have one question. The colloquy a minute ago between the chairman of the Finance Committee and the maker of the amendment caused me a question on the Seward prison. And generally, ASO 110090 says no statute is retrospective unless expressly declared therein. And this act, House Bill 392, does not declare it's retroactive. So unless this, I'm incorrect in this, it shouldn't apply to something that's already been approved, like the Seward prison. Am I wrong in that?
Representative Pettyjohn. Representative Clarkson.
Mr. Speaker, the retroactive effect of this legislation is a question that is not clear. I think the former speaker does suggest that the legislation which requires approval of the legislature could not work retroactively. I would submit that that question is not directly related to this amendment, that I would support the amendment. I believe it's good public policy, and perhaps we can make some inquiries with regard to the retroactivity question if this bill is reconsidered. But I would support the amendment because it's good policy regardless of the retroactivity question.
Representative Cato.
I object to the amendment. If it does actually have to do with former appropriations, former items like that, then we're not only talking about the Seward prison, we're talking about a great many other those that could be in jeopardy. Therefore, I very definitely do not support the amendment.
Representative Pierce.
Mr. Speaker, would you please have the clerk read the amendment again?
Would the clerk please read the amendment?
Amendment number 1 by Pettyjohn, page 1, line 29. After law, insert other than an appropriation.
Representative Pettyjohn.
Mr. Speaker, with regard to the remarks from the representative from Valdez, I think they are largely taken care of by the statute cited by the member from Spinard. This bill will be prospective. It is not retroactive. Now, with regard to the Seward prison, that I will be working on a letter of intent. I've got a draft of it, which I've circulated. I'm not going to offer that today because I want to look at the ramifications of it first. But it would be this bill, if the amendment's adopted, is prospective. Now, whether or not it would apply to the Seward prison, even though it's only prospective, would require some analysis of the language of the bill. And the question would be, in my mind, has the department entered into lease financing agreements, etc., that is on the first, on lines 19 of the bill? If the department's already entered into lease financing agreements for the construction of the Seward prison, then I would say that this bill probably does not apply. If the department has entered into lease financing agreements, lease purchase agreements, or agreements related to the issuance of certificates of participation, if they've already done that, I would say this bill did not apply. If they have not yet done that, then I think the bill would apply. But in any event, that's sort of a separate issue, as the majority leader says. The question is this good public policy? And whether it applies to Seward is a factual matter, but I don't think it affects the good public policy embodied in it.
Representative Hurley.
Technical question about the amendment. I don't know quite how to get to it, but I haven't seen the amendment because I don't have it on my desk, but shouldn't it say to delete the period so that it's clear that that's what you want it to come in before the period?
That was the intent of the sponsor of the amendment. Are there any objections to that being the understanding of this body? Can the clerk make that correction? Okay. Representative Gall.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Also, just a small technical clarification that I'd like the chair to interpret for me, if you would. It says, I do have the thing written down, the amendment. It says, other than an appropriation. Then the sentence would read, to be provided for, that is, the office facility or project to be provided for has been specifically approved by the legislature by law, other than an appropriation. I'm wondering if what that's really intended to mean is that in addition to an appropriation is what's really happening here. That you're saying that, let's say an appropriation has been made for the project, in addition to that, the actual agreement must be authorized by law. And I'm wondering whether that wouldn't help in the interpretation. It may not be sufficiently important, but I'd appreciate the sponsor's comment.
Representative Pettyjohn.
Mr. Speaker, the intent would be that the appropriation would be a separate question. In other words, it would be possible for the legislature to approve the Anchorage office building with a lease financing agreement involved in the approval, and there wouldn't actually be an appropriation. It could be something that wouldn't require an appropriation until the thing was built and we started the lease payments. So I think that the amendment makes sense, and what we're saying is that if such an agreement and such a project is to be approved, an appropriation, a line item in an appropriation bill does not constitute approval. It has to be a bill.
Are you ready for the question? The question is, shall amendment number one be adopted? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Would the clerk please lock the roll? Does any member wish to change his or her vote? Would the clerk please tally the board?
31 yeas, 8 nays.
Amendment number one has been adopted. We are back in third reading. Is there any further debate? Are you ready for the question? The question is, shall the House adopt House Bill 392 amended? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Would the clerk please lock the roll? Does any member desire to change his or her vote? Would the clerk tally the board?
39 yeas, no nays.
House Bill 392 amended has passed the House. Representative Clarkson.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent the roll call vote on House Bill 392 amended be considered the roll call vote on the effective date clause.
Are there any objections to the adoption of the effective date clause? Representative Adams.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to serve notice of my vote on House Bill number 392 amended.
Are there any objections to the effective date clause? Hearing no objection, the effective date clause has been adopted. There has been a notice of reconsideration given on said bill. Representative Furness.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to serve notice of reconsideration of my vote on House Bill 218, an act relating to the standards of conduct of legislators and legislative employees and the select committee, et cetera, et cetera.
Notice of reconsideration has been given for committee substitute for House Bill 218, Judiciary.
Mr. Speaker.
Do we, Representative Frankston? The House, please stand at ease. Would the House come back to order? We had an item moved to the bottom of the calendar. Would the clerk please read that item?
Committee substitute for House Bill number 236, financed by the Finance Committee, an act creating a quadrennial Olympic reserve account and providing for an effective date. We are in second reading, Mr. Speaker, and I have amendment number one on my desk.
Okay, we have an amendment. We are in second reading. Would the clerk at this time please read that amendment?
Amendment number one by Zemanski, page 3, line 23, delete may and replace with shall. Line 25, delete whether and replace with that.
Representative Zemanski.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent. Amendment number one be adopted.
Hearing objections to amendment number one, Representative Zemanski, would you care to go further? Is there any debate upon amendment number one? Representative Zemanski.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. It's just strictly a technical amendment. We were going to do it at one point in time, and we were moving it through the process in finance and decided that it would be better to just bring it down here and take care of it before.
Representative Cotton.
Would the clerk please read the amendment once again?
Amendment number one by Zemanski, page 3, line 23, delete may and replace with shall. Line 25, delete whether and replace with that.
Are objections still maintained to amendment number one? Still hear objections. Is there any debate on amendment number one? Representative Hurley.
Mr. Speaker, I call the House.
The House has been called on amendment number one.
Mr. Speaker, I remove my objection.
Okay. It was the representative way in the corner that I heard object the first time. Representative Miller.
I wonder perhaps in the form of a friendly amendment, if perhaps the member making the amendment might want to delete that last half, because it seems to me what he's doing is requiring something that may not be possible. So, as the member would amend it, it would read like this. The Department of Military and Veterans Affairs, shall require an independent audit of the financial records of the committee to determine that expenditures by the committee are consistent with the purpose of the committee. Well, what if they're not? What if there's been a misappropriation if they're not consistent? There's no way the audit can determine that they are if they're not. What the audit determines is whether they are consistent or not. And if they're not, then of course we all get excited and do something about it. But there's no way that the audit can go back and undo the misappropriation or the misuse that's been accomplished. So I think the second half of his amendment probably is unworkable.
Representative Duncan.
Well, Mr. Speaker, now we've heard why the second half is unworkable. The reason the first half isn't any good is as follows, which means then that the whole thing isn't. As I see it, the fiscal note on this bill, as I looked at the supplement, is $50,000. When you change line 23, the Department of Military and Veterans Affairs shall require an independent audit, you've just increased the fiscal note, which means it should go back to Finance Committee for further work, because an independent audit is probably not going to be cheap, assuming you need an audit, but you're not saying may, you're saying shall, which means it costs more money.
Any further debate on amendment number one?
Withdraw my...
Representative Hurley?
Withdraw my call of the House.
Okay, the call has been withdrawn. Are you ready for the question? The question is, shall the House adopt amendment number one? Members may proceed to vote.